listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, welcome to my couch, as you always are here on Wednesdays. Now we're at 12 noon Pacific Standard Time, and in your special area code, in your special part of the world, wherever you're at, thank you for joining me here. I have one of the best guests I've had who is an expert on mood disorders, depression in particular, but you are going to learn a lot today because she's covered it all in her latest book. And of course, so many of us are feeling fearful and scared and negative and depressed and anxious, what with what's going on in the world today and our own health. And of course, they say COVID is no longer a horrible thing, but I mean, actually, they urge us to get, you know, the booster shots and that kind of thing. We're also having strained relationships from everything, arguments. The world is in upheaval, as you know. We also have financial hardships. So it's tough right now for everybody. I was reading some of these statistics in my guest book today, and it said that one out of every four Americans will experience mental illness in their lifetime, and major depressive disorder is the leading cause of disability in the United States for ages 15 to 44. I mean, you know, that's incredible. And only a fraction of those suffering will seek treatment because, you know, a lot of folks suffer alone in silence. They don't understand what they're dealing with. They don't quite know how to get the help. So my special guest today, let's bring her on, psychologist Dr. Deborah Serrani. We're going to be talking about her latest book. It is the best. Let me hold it up right now so you can see it. Yeah, beautiful color too. I love it.
Thanks, Dr. Michelle. Yeah, they gave me a few colors to pick, and I'm like, yeah, those.
You got it. That's lovely. Dr. Deborah Serrani, Living with Depression, Why Biology and Biography Matter, Along the Path to Hope and Healing. Let me tell folks a little bit more about you as well, because, your accolades are really would take a long time, half an hour, actually. But you're a psychologist, professor, and award-winning author. You're also a go-to media expert on psychological issues. And you've seen her, folks. I know you've seen her before. She's been everywhere on ABC News, the Associated Press, CNN, the New York Times, USA Today, radio programs like NPR, CBS, that's just to name a few. Also, Dr. Serrani worked as a TEDx speaker. She writes for Psychology Today, has worked as a technical advisor for one of the top-rated shows, and has been and still is. It is the Law and Order Special Victims Unit. Y'all have seen that, of course. And she's been a licensed psychologist in practice for over 30 years, and she still resides in New York. Dr. Deborah, you can't be working for 30 years. You look like you're 25. What's up with you?
No, believe me, the outside may look different. The inside is all decrepit and old.
Oh, you're cool. And, your book, wow. I mean, it is it's the fully updated second edition, but it's probably one of the best absolute go-tos books on experiencing depression and other mood disorders, how to cope with them, and the stigma behind them. And how to really get help medically, how to understand what we're all dealing with as well. So, and I say we're all because, I mean, most everyone has depression from time to time in their lives. But, you know, we're going to talk about when does it get pretty chronic to where you should get help. Also, Deborah is going to give you a list, not the whole list, because there's over 450 folks at the end in her Appendix A in her book, who you will recognize. Very high-profile celebrities, geniuses, scientists, art specialists, everybody, authors, you name it. I mean, who have suffered from mood disorders. So with that, with that huge intro, welcome here to the couch. And I also want to thank you in your book for sharing your personal story.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Michelle. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. I've been wanting to get you on for, you're a very busy girl for a long time. So,
as are you.
Oh, can you share with us your story? I mean, it really moved me that you were so transparent and open about your own depression. So can you touch on that a little bit?
Sure. So I did not know at the time that I was struggling with a chronic depression as a girl.
Yeah.
I just thought everybody was tired and weepy and tearful. And I learned this after I was in college and descended into a really very bad depressive episode.
Yeah.
And I became very negative in my thinking, mm-hmm. and suicidal, and had a plan and acted upon it. Wow. Luckily, it was interrupted.
Yes.
And I got immediate help. I began seeing a psychologist, mm-hmm. and I learned that I was in a depressive episode, but I also learned that I had been living with dysthymic disorder, which we now call persistent depressive disorder.
Right.
And so my therapist changed my life, saved my life.
Oh.
And I said, I want to do this. It was such a meaningful experience that I wanted to become a therapist and help others. And I just noticed along the way that people weren't really talking about their own experiences. I guess there was a lot of taboo about it. But yeah. I think it can be one of the most curative pieces when we self-disclose in a way that's treatment productive for patients. So that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Oh, bless your heart, you know, and again, thanks for being so candid about it. And thank goodness somebody found you and disrupted your attempt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very, very lucky. Yeah.
Yeah, you sure are. And we're going to talk about that as well, because, I mean, it's how we can try to prevent it and how patients themselves mm-hmm. can really give themselves some tools to work with so they can monitor their own depression in that way. So is that pretty much why you wrote the book? And you just said, wow, I got to share how to get better. I'm a psychologist.
I had written some academic articles talking about the use of self-disclosure and how it could destigmatize the issue of mental illness with patients. So I was writing from a very, I guess, clinical and academic point of view. And somebody had suggested that maybe there was a self-help book in this idea. And so I did. I started to write Living with Depression, sort of like part memoir, part self-help book. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many things that I understand uniquely as a patient who struggles with depression and as a doctor who treats depression.
Yes.
And I think so much of the general public isn't aware of some of these tips and tricks mm-hmm. and things to do with insurance or things to do with struggles with pharmacy and other types of care. So that's where this was born from, like a collective effort to say, let me see if I can take my story and help others.
Oh, that's beautiful. And you sure have. And the book is really thorough, explaining so much about, the symptomology and medications and treatments psychologically, with therapists. And so we're going to get into some of that stuff. You talked about, the idea of stigma.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's also a lot of cultures. And I know you work with folks from all over the world and cultures that pretty much do place shame or stigma on depression or bipolar or any kind of.
Yeah.
Gosh, I mean, this is all over the world.
Yeah. And you'd think, Dr. Michelle, that with all of the neuroscience and studies that we have that show that a great deal of mental health issues are definitely genetically related, environmentally related, that we see the neuroscience behind how certain disorders, particularly like depression, mm-hmm. impair the frontal lobe of the brain. Mm-hmm. And yet there's still this stigma because I suppose, you know, we still sensationalize mental illness. Look, we just had Halloween, and we know what kinds of costumes can kind of get a little destigmatizing. Stigmatizing with the holiday. But yeah, there are many cultures that don't embrace the let's talk about things. Let's address certain vulnerabilities. It's seen as weakness, or it's seen as just too much, you know, navel gazing. This really isn't important.
Right.
So yeah, it can be very, very challenging.
Sure. I mean, how many times have you heard patients tell you, you know, oh, I don't tell any members of my family that I have a therapist.
Right.
Oh, no one knows. Oh, no, that would never happen. I'd be shamed.
That's true.
Sad, but I'm not blaming the culture, or, you know, it's a thing, you know.
But. Yeah, I think, you know, if we saw somebody with a broken leg or a broken arm, we would say, oh, you have to go to the doctor for that. Of course. In fact, I'll help open the door for you as you go.
Yeah.
But the invisibility of many kinds of chronic illnesses besides mental illness, there's just this, either it's denial, avoidance, or minimization that happens. Mm-hmm. But those of us who live with mental health issues will tell you that, you know, it doesn't define us, but it certainly is a part of us that we have to be mindful of and take care of.
Exactly. And also, you educate people so much in your book about, you know, the inheritance, you know, factor. I mean, I'm sure you've heard a lot of patients say something like, well, we didn't know quite what was going on, but my grandmother seemed to be pretty down all the time, or my grandma, or, you know, my dad was a pretty quiet guy, and he just didn't see much going on. He didn't want to be with the family. But we don't know really what the deal was, but I'm depressed all the time. So do you have any advice for people to sort of look into their family background? Or
as you know, Dr. Michelle, it's such an important thing to be able to glance at your family history, not only for your medical history and the lineage that's there, but also for your mental history. We know that a large percent of certain disorders carry with it a genetic predisposition. But the switch that turns on those genetic predispositions don't guarantee that if there's a lineage of depression or mood disorders or OCD anxiety, that you're going to get it. But but it can help us understand why you may be struggling with it. And what we know about epigenetic studies are that, which is really not a lot, but what we know is that certain types of traumas can flip these switches for some people. That's why if you have difficulties in early childhood or a situational issue going on, like a loss of a job, you may fall into a depressive disorder because of those traumas and the environment pressing on your genetics. Wow. So it's a biography, biology, kind of nature, nurture experience. Mm-hmm. And the more you know, the less shame you feel.
No, it's really true. It's Good Will Hunting. I was watching that the other day, and it was like, it's not your fault, Robin Williams.
It's not your fault. That's so true.
You grew up in this crazy, traumatic environment. And also, by the way, your mom had super depression. So there you go. Bada boom. You're 50-50 right there. So you're
right.
You know, so excuse yourself and stop beating yourself up for not feeling as positive.
Right. We would never shame somebody for having a medical condition like cancer, leukemia, multiple sclerosis, even though they may have a lineage of that. But somehow we carry that, you know, shame stick, like, you know, you're not trying hard enough, or you're just, oh, you're too sensitive, you're too dramatic.
Yeah, you're right, and it is. It's a stigma, and it's self-shaming, and, oh, I shouldn't be, and, you know, no, you're right. It's like, on the other hand, there are those celebrities and people in the media and very high-profile people that you list in your Appendix A. Right. Oops. I'm trying to get the glitter off. There you go, folks. You listed, and say, who over 400, probably around 450 maybe sort of kind of people who have been diagnosed with a depressive disorder, primarily depression, major depressive disorder, and bipolar.
Right. So, I wanted to cover mood disorders, particularly in postpartum.
Yeah. Postpartum is huge. And you specialize that in that as well.
Yeah, and I experienced that as well, which is a very common thing when you have a depressive disorder before you start to decide to have a baby. If you're struggling with a mood disorder, bipolar or unipolar, it's a good idea to kind of review that, because there's a high likelihood after the trigger and trauma of birth that you may fall into postpartum. And it's not just postpartum depression. There's postpartum bipolar, postpartum OCD. It's the actual disorder with a peripartum onset.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, there's dual factors in creating that. There's, you know, the hormones, of course.
Sure.
The loss of, or change in hormones, and the loss of the connection with that little being that's, you know, only women who've had kids can relate to this.
Sure. And fathers can get postpartum too.
Yes, they can.
And that's an unusual thing to think about, but it's really just a trigger being a new parent after the birth of a child. So, you know, specifying different types of onsets is helpful for people too, like a seasonal onset of depression. So all this education is really great. So you can say, you know, gee, there is a reason why I'm feeling this way, and these are the things that I can do about it.
Oh, that's super. What are the most common kind of differences between, say, a major depressive disorder or just a, you know, depressive disorder in general, and bipolar disorders, so people will understand this better?
Well, the best way that I could describe that is that major depressive episode, or what used to be called a dysthymic, it's now persistent depressive disorder, the experience of emotions kind of falls in one polarity. It pulls down to this sadness, despair, and depression.
Yeah.
And individuals who struggle with those unipolar disorders, and there are quite a few, kind of move from that to a back to normal kind of state.
Mm-hmm.
People who have persistent depressive disorder, it's a longer, more timely, chronic experience. Mm-hmm. And a major depressive disorder, which most people in the general public see it, that's really a somewhat of a unusual dip.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That can last a week, two, three, or a few months, and then the person comes back.
Right.
When we talk about bipolarity, we're talking not only about this dip,
yes,
where depression is, but an elevated state that kind of comes up to an expansive level of hypomania or mania.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody who has that kind of cycles back up and down throughout the calendar year, uniquely to them, because everybody experiences this differently.
Sure.
So they're two very, very different experiences, but both can be extremely disruptive in the quality of one's life.
Oh my goodness, you're right. And the hypomania, or the, you know, the manic episodes, are, you know, come in all different forms, and it's very, very difficult to manage and very scary.
Right. You know? And sometimes people don't know they have it because they feel so good in a manic episode. Or a hypomanic episode is not as observable. It's not as expansive. So sometimes people will say, well, what do you mean I have bipolar disorder? That's called bipolar 2 disorder. So, you know, when you have some of these experiences and you're not sure, this is why it's so important to go to, you know, like a trained mental health person who can help you understand what it is that you're living with. Is it situational? Is it chronic? Is it subclinical?
Yeah.
Is it a true disorder that needs to be addressed?
Sure.
You know, there could be all different kinds of things.
Gosh, it's so true. A lot of people, you know, are, oh, big pharma, and, you know, medication is maybe not the best, and let's start using, you know, herbal products and this and that. But I'll tell you, from working in hospitals and psychiatric facilities for a while, you know, those antidepressants and some of the antipsychotics or whatever, they really are helpful to people. They really are. It's, so maybe you can explain that and dissolve some of that fear around.
Dr. Michelle, that's it is a tough subject, but, you know, we do see it when we're working on the front lines, particularly mild cases of depression can do well with these holistic approaches, alternative approaches, aromatherapy, light therapy, those kinds of things that we call complementary treatments. Right. And there's great science in it, without a doubt.
Sure.
But if you're struggling with a moderate or severe mood disorder, it's unlikely that those holistic, non-traditional methods are going to really provide the necessary changes and shifts in your neurochemistry. Talk therapy, which we do, does address problem-solving, coping strategies, and getting to certain blind spot issues or trauma that we haven't addressed. But sometimes medication really is needed because the depressive state is not just an emotional experience. It can be a physical one. Right. And there's significant brain changes. You're not functioning as well as you could. And I remember this with my, when I was 19 and I just was so focused on ending my life and this is what it has to be. And I'm going to feel better with this. And I didn't realize how like damaged my thinking was until I recovered. And how could I ever have thought that? My God, I can't believe I ever felt those things. And it's so alien and foreign to me now because I'm healed. Yes. And I take medicine. I've been on medication for 30 years and I've come off it from time to time just to see. Mm-hmm. And I'm one of those individuals that, hello, nice to see you again, little black cloud. Okay, let me go back on it. Sure. And just like I wear my glasses or if I needed insulin or if I needed something else to, you know, regulate my body, I take my medication and it makes me better. It doesn't change me. It makes me a better Debbie.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and that's the thing I think we both stress, and I know so many of my colleagues do. It's like, if you have diabetes, you need your insulin.
Right.
Same. If you have, and you know, I was going to ask you about that to help explain a little bit, but if, you know, you got to push along your own serotonin level a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, I have family members and we do have a lot of mood disorders and anxiety disorders in the family lineage. Mm-hmm. But I know for myself as a doctor that my best self is when I follow my treatment plans and, you know, I do my self-care and I take my medication consistently. Mm-hmm. And I know as a patient that when I don't do those things, I'm not at my best. And, you know, that affects, I couldn't do the work that I do. And that would affect so many other aspects of my life. But there's still a lot of shame about medication and the need for medication. Like you could just will it. I'm just going to snap out of it.
Right.
But you can't do that. You can't will my brown eyes to be blue. I can't do that.
Right.
So I know it's a controversial subject. And that's why I talk openly about it, because there's a lot to consider and a lot to bargain with.
Right.
But, to not be alone in saying, okay, you know, I need this medication because my body just doesn't function as well and my mind doesn't function as well. Mm-hmm. So what? So be it.
So what? It's just whatever is going to help you. And the majority of folks who I've worked with, they have seen really positive improvements.
There are certainly stories out there when people have, you know, maybe medications that don't work well or adverse side effects. But I agree with you, Dr. Michelle. I would say 99.9% of the people I work with will say, so why didn't you suggest this sooner? Or why didn't I start this sooner? For me, it was life-changing. It was really, truly life-changing.
Right. It bless your heart. Thank you for sharing that again. And by the way, Dr. Deborah Serrani is the author of the second edition, updated edition of her best-selling book. It's Living with Depression, Why Biology and Biography Matter, Along with the Path to Hope and Healing.
Yeah,
and
such a mouthful, that second title.
It's a mouthful, but you know what? We got to have that subtitle there because it really does. It's what it's all about here in your book.
Oh, that was my editor. I'm like, really? Does it have to be that wordy? Yes, we like it. Okay.
Folks really know what's going on here, you know. So there it is. Whoop, there you go, folks. Excellent book. It's like an encyclopedia, actually. It tells you so much about, you know, different types of mood disorders, including, you know, major depressive, persistent depressive. Also, we have the bipolar disorders, other mood disorders as well. Are explaining it. You know, a lot of people say to me, I'm anxious part of the time as well as being depressed. Do they usually go hand in hand?
You know, the interesting thing about mental health issues is that the rule of thumb is there's often a comorbidity or a coexistence with a disorder. So yes, depression likes to join itself with anxiety, and anxiety likes to pal around with depression. So yeah. It's not unusual to have these dual different kinds of experiences. But this is why each person has to really be working with, if you're working with your primary care to figure out, you know, what some of your initial symptoms are.
Right.
And they recommend a therapist that you go to somebody who specializes in what you're experiencing.
Right.
So, for instance, if somebody's going to come in and talk about an eating disorder or addiction, I'm not that person.
Right.
And it's best to go to that kind of trained specialty because they know the current evidence-based things and treatments and things like that.
Really?
But, you know, having a targeted diagnosis really helps.
Sure.
And, you know, there's a lot of great things online. I know some of my own colleagues are like, oh, you know, you don't mind when people do those self-tests. And I'm like, no, not at all. It kind of is like a shorthand. They know they're depressed or they know they're struggling with OCD because they took the OCD test from UCLA online. You know, so those things can really be useful tools.
Right.
So, yes, there's a lot of coexistence or comorbidity, sometimes more than two, sometimes three or four.
Sure.
So the more you know about what your unique experience is, the more targeted your treatment can be with the therapist that you work with.
Oh, that's so true. Beautifully said. And speaking about working with therapists, can you talk about some of the really most effective sort of types of therapies for depression?
Sure.
Mood disorders.
I'm a trained psychoanalyst.
Oh, wow.
And
Very cool.
Psychoanalysis. Yeah, I just love it. psychoanalysis is a very, very old therapy. And the art of it kind of looks towards subconscious or trauma-related issues.
Right.
And it can be very, very helpful for individuals who come from a long narrative of early abuse and things of that nature.
Sure.
But a lot of science-based research also suggests cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. This is where you look at how you're thinking, because many people who do experience depression have a very negative outlook. It's not that they're doing it on purpose. Again, part of the frontal lobe of the brain just isn't using reasoning, judgment, and problem solving to its effective level.
Yeah.
So we look to change certain kinds of thinking instead of being catastrophic or negative. Try to say, okay, you know, I'm out of a job. This is terrible. How am I going to make my rent? Well, you know, I always bounce back on my feet and I will find something. And if not, you know, I can ask for help and I'll get help from my family.
Right.
So it takes the emotional piece of saying I'm doomed to, well, it is bad, and frames it in a reality that hopefully has some positive pieces to it. And then there's a behavioral strategy which looks at the way you've shaped your behavior, the reinforcers that attend your life in a particular way might be reinforcing you to be sad. And so a behaviorist would look to shift and start finding ways that you reward yourself positively for more uplifting things.
Right. Maybe whatever, meditation or getting social or getting more social.
Yeah. Right. And we all kind of know a person who tends to love, they kind of get reinforced because their friends rally around them when something terrible happens. That's not necessarily a depressive disorder, but it can contribute, especially if you're looking at the glass half empty. And then there are lots of short-term therapies that look at like 6 to 12 weeks interpersonal therapy techniques. So the key here is that there's lots of different things. There's EMDR. There's tapping therapies. There's so much that one can look at. And I think you don't necessarily have to read my book, but if you do a little deep dive on what therapies are out there and you just research them and read a little bit, a sentence or two, they'll speak to you and what you may like more. So there are, people who work with me, know they're coming in to do insight work.
Sure, exactly.
You might not really want to do that. Maybe you want to say, I want to do cognitive behavioral, or wait, what is that EMDR? I'm going to do that.
Right, right. And the EMDR is the eye desensitization.
Right, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, which is a fascinating, wonderfully science-based. I've seen it. I've took training in it.
Yes.
It's remarkable in what it can do. Very neuroscience based. Mm-hmm. And again, I love to embrace all different interventions and treatments. There's a lot of room for us all as clinicians to help people we're working with. It's just a matter of you, whoever's struggling, to find the clinician that best suits and makes them feel comfortable.
Exactly. Who you vibe with or who you connect with, and also the treatment that really feels good for you. If you're moving along and feeling better and better. It's not always fun all the time to have psychoanalytic or, other exploratory therapy techniques. Because it can be painful and difficult, because that's why
we
have all that junk down, right, Dr. Deborah?
Right. That's so true. And look, I do think there's more than one road to Rome. Is that the expression?
Yeah.
It's about individuals knowing, what they want. And you'll know if you're in therapy, if you're feeling better. And if you're not, it may just not be a good match.
Right.
And to give it another shot, because hope and healing is out there.
Yes. It is. And there's, again, and read up. I would encourage, viewers and listeners to read up on the different types of therapy, so you'll understand what they may be and how they may be best for you. And like you said, Dr. Deborah Serrani, it's okay to go online and check.
My gosh. I love the internet for that reason. In fact, I'm always telling people, read this, read that, or did you see this?
Yeah, exactly. So the medical treatments are good as well. Explore some of those. Doctors have, don't let the names of certain medications freak you out.
Yeah. The one thing that I would like to say to listeners is medication can be a very, very helpful way to ease the symptoms of serious depressive disorders. Mm-hmm. And there are genetic tests now. I'm not affiliated with any of these labs, though I wish I was.
Isn't that incredible? Yeah.
It's incredible. I actually took the test to see if what I was taking was accurate, and it is.
Great.
So we can find very targeted, immediate medications through genetic testings that you get through your medical doctor, to assess what type of medicines will help address your particular genetic issues with your depression. And that's the most traditional first line, is looking at medication to help serious depressive illnesses. There are many other kinds of medical interventions. There's electroconvulsive therapy, which is not like the movie show, not like Beautiful Mind or One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It's done in a hospital setting and you're put under a sedative and certain electro areas of the brain are stimulated, and it really helps people who struggle with severe treatment resistant depression. And then another more common accessed intervention is called RTMS, transcranial magnetic stimulation. Mm-hmm. And there's no side effects, and you can go to a local clinician's office, and they do this electromagnetic kind of swirly stuff around, and it stimulates the areas that are not functioning as well, because that's what we know about brain function and depression. There's less electroactivity.
Yes, yes.
And then there's even more.
Yeah.
There's deep brain stimulation. There's vagus nerve implants. If you have a treatment-resistant depression, there's a lot of, which once were experimental therapies, now available. Yeah. But most individuals, about 40%, and that's a low number, 40% of us do well with medication. Mm-hmm. The other 60% may need to kind of look at these alternative approaches.
Sure, exactly. And you know as well that for persistent and more serious diagnoses of depression or bipolar depression, they really have had some amazing results, you know, with the RTMS as well. I mean, I've heard a lot of positive things about that and the deep brain stimulation as well. It's happening.
They're even talking about using psychedelics and, it's wonderful to be broadening the scope of seeing what can help certain individuals, because for a very long time, there were patients who felt that nobody was really believing them, that their depressions were intractable and they wouldn't get better. And, you're just not trying hard enough and you're not following through on your treatment. But these are real significant possibilities that can offer relief for individuals, which is really a wonderful thing.
Right.
To know that they're being heard and treatment and research is happening.
And they are giving the certain medications like ketamine treatment.
Yes. Oh, I forgot to talk about ketamine. Yeah. And esketamine. And there's a whole branch of psychiatry and medicine, botanicals, all kinds of things. And it's, to me as a doctor and a patient, it's exciting to see that there's more than just the traditional things out there, because they don't always work for everybody.
No, it's really true. What you talk about the five R's.
I have to get my book for that.
Yeah, girl, let's talk to the book.
Yes, I do talk about the five R's. And I've written about the five R's. But do I remember the five R's?
Oh, of course you do. The moment you open the page, you're going to say, that's right.
But yeah, it's relapse, recovery, remission.
There you go.
I found it. That's so funny. I'm glad people can see a real moment here.
It's all real.
When you're somebody who lives with depression, you just think you go to the clinician or you go to the doctor and you're just going to feel better. Right. And I thought it would be really helpful to talk about the levels that occur along the way. So when you're looking to totally be feeling better, which might be 6 weeks away, six months away, depending on what you're struggling with, these little steps help you go, I will get to the top of Mount Everest because every step counts.
Right.
So the first one, and you let me know if I'm talking too long. The first one's called response. Mm-hmm. And this is when you are just beginning to feel a little bit better. And we call that a response to treatment. And that's the first level. And then we hopefully want you to keep doing your therapy, taking your meds, doing your treatment goals. So you reach a level of remission, which means your symptoms are gone.
Right.
Once you reach remission, our next goal is to hopefully get you to recovery, which means that you've been a whole year, 9 months to a year without any symptoms. So these are the big three steps that happen. But if, and this is one of the toughest things to talk about, one thing that prevents people from feeling better and getting better is consistency. The research shows that if we don't consistently take our meds, consistently do our self-care, consistently work our schedule, eat well, sleep well, all those things, we're going to fall into what's called relapse. That's the next R. Or recurrence. You have a recurrence of your symptoms. So I just thought that it would be, it just so happened to all be R's.
It's true.
That it would just be helpful to understand these steps and how, you know, not only giving them a name, but understanding that we really can get better over the course of time if we do these things.
No, it's really true. Well said and beautifully put. And that's the thing. And what I hear a lot is folks say, you know, I'm feeling so much better. I don't know if I really need this.
Oh, yes. And that's what happens.
And the cold turkey is not good either with the SSRIs or, of course.
No. Yeah, terrible. And Dr. Michelle, that's such a good point, because when we get to remission, we think we're there. But we haven't gotten to recovery. And so that's when people abandon therapy, or they don't take their meds, or they say, I'm going to come every other week or once a month. And we say, you know, we still need to have this consistency. And that's the reason why, because you need to get to recovery. And that's a bit of a longer journey.
Exactly. And there's always, again, you know, as we talked about stigma, and there's pressure from others around us, you know, we feel, am I anti-pharma, you know? That whole thing is like, am I ever going to be able to get off these medication? When can I get off? When am I going to be able to just get, it's like, well, you may not ever.
Right. You may not. And that's okay. And that's okay too. How do we make that okay?
Yes, exactly. It's really okay. And as you said, it's just like having, you know, an issue. You have to take your medication. You need your glasses.
Glasses. I'm not getting LASIK. I'm too chicken for that. But
no, don't. Trust
I would
me.
Still need my reading glasses, because they don't fix that.
Right.
But how do we make things a little easier for people to bear, whatever their vulnerabilities may be? You know, it doesn't define us. It's just a part of us.
I just wanted to touch also the 2B factor in depression. You talk about that.
That's the biography part and the biology part. Right. Think of nature, nurture.
Okay.
You know, really know and try to know your genetic makeup, you know, your family background. And then, you know, this is the psychoanalyst in me. Really understand your life narrative. Understand what you've been through, where you've lived, what strengths you have, what weaknesses you have, what things were hard for you, what things maybe were traumatic that you didn't realize were. Yeah. So really know thyself. The more you know, and the partnership you have with your therapist, it becomes a really meaningful journey to say, okay, this is who I am, this is who I've been, and this is who I want to be.
Yeah, beautifully said, Deborah. In case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with me, Michelle Cohen. My special guest is Dr. Deborah Serrani. She's written an amazing book, Living with Depression. Oops, and there's my glare. Pick it up. It's one of the best books I've read, folks.
Dr. Michelle, you're so nice.
Oh, it's true,
you're
Deborah.
So nice.
Dr. Serrani, you're best. Why biology and biography matter along the path to hope and healing. It's really important for you all to understand how important all this stuff is. The clouds do clear. There is wonderful hope with all the medications and the therapies that we have today. you know, to manage depression. So, briefly, I was really shocked to learn the statistics, you know, going back earlier to what I said, and I was reading in your book, the second leading cause of death for adults, 25 to 34, is depression.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And then the third leading cause is for adolescents, 15 to 24. Why do you suppose this is, Doctor?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with certain cultural issues, certain pressures in life. We know that the adolescent brain doesn't fully develop till age 25. And sometimes the pressures of things and children who can't really manage and problem solve.
Right.
You know, suicide is the most preventable death.
Yes.
And the highest level of suicide rates are for older men, 45 to 80. It's a big age range. And that was surprising for me to discover. Suicide rates are higher than before. We thought they would get a little bit lower during COVID, and they did, but not really. So, you know, what I can say about suicide is that a large percent of individuals who die by suicide have had an undiagnosed depressive disorder or an undertreated depressive disorder. So this is why, you know, we want to screen kids young. We want to educate everybody about the signs and symptoms, and we want to get help because there is hope.
There is, beautifully said. And to your point too about you know, older men. I mean, I really get it. I mean, there's so many factors. A lot of retirement, perhaps, going on. Mm. A lot of children in the house. They're older and they're out and away to college, or they have their own families. Mm-hmm. You know, the stressors involved financially.
Once sure. Long. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's ageism in the workplace.
A lot of yes.
You know, so many different factors, and you know, just I'm getting older. I have, you know, more aches and pains, and how I have diabetes or not. I mean, I really get it.
This isn't what I thought it would be. And what do you mean? This is my last lap around, you know.
Right. My golden years were supposed to be golden. So, I mean, it's true. Anyway, I just wanted to wrap by saying thank you so much again for this book. You're amazing.
That's so kind of you, and you are too, and all that you do in outreach, and this, just having this show, you know, being on the couch with you has been a wonderful experience, so thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Dr. Deborah Serrani, everywhere, and you can also check her out, Dr. Deborah Serrani, and that's D-R-D-E-B-O-R-A-H. That's the proper way to spell it. Dr. Deborah Serrani, SERANI.com. That's her website. Find out more about Dr. Deborah and all of the wonderful things that you have to offer. And check her out. You've seen her before in so many different media outlets. And this is her latest book. If you'd like to get a hold of it, it is everywhere. And it will really help you understand. Look, if you're not dealing with depression, if you... you know, don't have a diagnosis, or you're just wondering why you're not feeling well. Also, you know, you can help family members by giving them this book. Mm-hmm. Have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. You take good care.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody, for being here on the couch. And this is Dr. Michelle. I'll be back next week with another great author. We'll be talking about other things to help you out. Have a great week. Bye.
Listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.